Welcome to Trust Radio, the Investment Trust podcast brought to you by Janus Henderson Investors. I'm Laura Thomas, and in this episode, I'll be discussing change with Tom O'Hara, the co-portfolio manager of the Henderson European Focus Trust. This episode is brought to you in association with Janus Henderson Investors. It's for promotional purposes, it's not for onward distribution, and the value of an investment can fall as well as rise. Past performance is not a guide to future performance, and nothing in this episode should be construed as advice. Anything said in this episode is the view of the fund manager when we recorded and may have changed as events have developed over time. Our discussion is for illustrative purposes only, and references made to individual securities should not constitute or form part of any offer or solicitation to issue, sell, subscribe, or purchase the security. Tom, we know that change is a constant in investing as much as it is in life. And indeed, the construction of the trust's portfolio has been through some significant change over the last year and a half, as you've moved from a V-shaped industrial recovery play to the return of the consumer. Obviously, huge events like the pandemic drive changes in the investment opportunities available to you. But what other changes can also make a compelling case for investment? Could you please describe your approach in identifying and exploiting the changes in the companies in which you look to invest?
Yeah, sure. Management change is a classic investment strategy, and it's something we really like in the trust. And the reason for that is that companies can lose their way. You know, they lose focus. Corporates might bloat with middle management layers. And these people can be misincentivized, they're detached from the fundamental reason for the existence of that company, which is to serve customers. And so we think when you get the right management team into a business like that, you can get results. A good management team can restore customer focus, reshape the culture, remove the dysfunction, and correct the incentive structures. So, well, how do we identify these opportunities? Firstly, we'll do some groundwork. And you can do that by looking at the financials and the KPIs. Is it lagging its peer group on revenue growth, on profit margins, on cash flow, on return on capital? And if yes, what could it achieve if you had the right management team running the business? So if you can see that there's a gap versus the peer group, that can be a pretty good sign that there's something to be done here by the right group of people. And then this is where it gets more exciting, I guess, which is meeting this new management team. That's absolutely key for us. And it's a real competitive advantage at Janus Henderson. You know, we're a big organization. We get the access to these companies. And essentially, it's like any other social interaction in many ways. You know, you get in a room with these people and you suss them out. You work out whether they're driven, whether they're well incentivized. Can you trust them? Or are they quite arrogant? Are they egotistical? You know, that can be a bit of a turn off. But if you get the right vibe from them, then that's a really good sign. And if you put that together with the financial groundwork that I mentioned, which is this company could be run better, then putting those two things together is a pretty good investment proposition, we think.
Yeah, for sure. And it's quite interesting, isn't it? Because I think you and John, your co-manager on the portfolio, have sort of said in the past as well, you know, sort of looking for those inflection points when you're looking at companies as well. And obviously, you know, this is a really key one for you both when looking at those companies and, you know, what management can kind of then go on to do, hopefully, in the future.
Yeah. I think, yeah, that's it. And sometimes, I don't know, maybe this is a dangerous analogy to use, but it makes us sound flippant or something like that. But it's a bit like in football when a football team changes its manager. More often than not, you get a honeymoon period where things go quite well for the club. And the reason for that is often that the person comes in, it's fresh blood, they go in all guns blazing, they won't accept mediocrity, and they crack the whip. And yeah, things can fall by the wayside eventually, and that's obviously not what we'd want to happen with an investment in a company. You want somebody who can sustain a positive change in a business. But it is like that, you know, new blood into a business can really shake things up, and it can come through quite quick as well. You can really, you know, we've had a number of companies across our funds over the last couple of years, real basket case companies, or that's the way the market perceives them. And within no time, the market's viewing them differently because the new guys have come in and they've shown the market that costs were way too high and that there was a lot of low-hanging fruit that could be cut. And before you know it, revenue growth is accelerating again. So it's a real tangible human aspect to investing, I think. And as I said, the fact that you get to meet these people, that you get to vet them, is absolutely key, and it's pretty much the most enjoyable part of the job.
And, you know, we seem to have been living in an ever-increasing world of change for a very long time, and that's one where consumers seem to want to move on to the next fashionable thing. And one of the things we certainly noticed last year in 2020 with the arrival of the COVID-19 pandemic was that this accelerated some of those changes or trends. You know, is the pace of the change within companies increasing? And if so, which sectors, or are there particular sectors in the portfolio that you're seeing experience the most significant changes?
Yes, there are some, but I think two broad observations I'd make through COVID has been cost cutting and restructuring has been accelerated, and then digitalization, which is always talked about a lot, but it is true. So I'll come on to that. But firstly, on cost cutting, I think that, you know, the old saying, never waste a good crisis, I think that really rings true for COVID. And I think it really rings true on European equities, because we cover a number of countries, a number of jurisdictions where changing a company, restructuring, which often involves losing people, can be very difficult. I'm thinking of France, Germany, heavily unionized, those sorts of things. That can impede cultural and structural change in a business. COVID has given management teams an opportunity to do that hard work, to restructure, to take costs out of a business, because it was a once in a generation pause on the business, you know. Even the automotive producers, and that's a sector, I would say specifically, that's a sector where you really see the benefits of accelerated restructuring through COVID. But even those auto manufacturers shut their plants down in the second quarter of last year. It's amazing to think of now, because we've kind of, as a society, figured out how to limp through COVID and kind of keep the wheels turning. But, you know, March, April last year, things ground to a halt. It's very rare that the clock stops in a business. And the fact that it did gave a lot of businesses the opportunity to really shake things up. And we can see that now in the automotive sector. They've got better margins than they had pre-crisis. They've got better cash flow. And they've also accelerated the shift to electric vehicles. And that's been a real overhang for the sector for a couple of years now. You know, as Tesla's share price has gone to the moon because Elon Musk can do no wrong, the rest of the car world, and in particular, you know, the European car companies, the Volkswagens, BMWs, they were basically put in the stock market bin because everybody thought they were going to fail in transitioning to electric vehicles, but they've actually accelerated that quite significantly over the last year. And you're seeing that now. You know, these car companies have come out the other side of COVID with largely very good balance sheets, better profitability, new electric vehicle ranges coming out. And I think it's already challenging that Tesla, rest of the automotive world disconnect, but it's only going to challenge it more and more. So that was, you know, really interesting feature of COVID. And then the second one, as I mentioned, digitalization. You will not speak to a company or hear a company now that doesn't talk about their digital strategy. Even if you think they're kind of lying a bit, they all talk about it. It's a buzzword, but it does feel like a company's digital technology R&D budget is now sacrosanct. You can't touch that. You can't sacrifice that. You know, that's the last thing in a crisis you will cut now. And there are some very obvious reasons for that. which we've all seen because we all sat at home like couch potatoes, ordering things from Amazon and Deliveroo and any number of millions of delivery apps that all seem to make no money but seem to trade on ridiculous share prices. But that's probably for another podcast. But e-commerce was the thing that really accelerated through COVID. And even big, cumbersome businesses here in the UK, like a Tesco, you know, people have not really thought of that as a digital business. But now, I think it's 15% of their business comes through their online platform, and it's growing. So they've all had to invest, and they had to invest quickly to get the logistics, the delivery, the software in place to be able to suddenly cope with a massive increase in home delivery services. So that's one side of digitalization being accelerated. The other is the bit that you and I have been doing for the last year, although not right now because we get to sit in the room together. It's working from home, so remote working. A lot of businesses probably weren't ideally placed for that at the beginning, so they had to cobble it together, and they've all had to invest a lot since then, because secondary to first making sure your people can work and function from home is suddenly all of these new concerns around data security, which is incredibly important in the business world today. So that's another area of massively increased expenditure. And there are other opportunities where companies can see that, you know, we call it the fourth industrial revolution, or, you know, there are some other cliches that are used to describe it. But this massive step-changing technology that we've had is now being applied to legacy, old industries, to actually make the value of a product or service even better. And so I can think of examples in medtech where, say, a Philips or a Siemens Healthineers that have been giving scanning devices to hospitals for years suddenly have all of this new technology that they can integrate into those devices. You know, it's cloud data collection, analytics, all of this smart stuff that allows the proposition of that device to be enormously enhanced. So digitalization, everyone talks about it, it's a buzzword. Everyone loves tech. You always buy tech in stock markets, you don't buy anything else. But, you know, it's there, and we can see it even in our companies in sleepy old Europe.
Great, that's some really interesting insight, I think, into the sector side of things there, and leads really nicely into my last question for you on our topic of change today, which is, can we talk a little bit more about an example or two of companies within the portfolio where significant change has kind of happened within them, or indeed the environment they operate in, and how that sort of presented you with an investment opportunity?
Yeah, so I can think of two examples, and the first one is just that classic management change investment strategy, which is Danone. So yogurts, baby formula, bottled water, and loads of sort of sustainability type guff that they'd throw out there in marketing campaigns, and you never quite knew what they were about or who they were actually for, which again, maybe that's a separate topic, stakeholder capitalism. I think a lot of companies are struggling with that. And Danone was one of them. They rarely seem to appoint external people to run things. It always felt like a bit of an insular club, and anybody who challenged them, you know, shareholders going, why are your margins lagging in this division? Why are you doing this here? What are you doing in this country? We're sort of treated with disdain. And what they finally did, they appointed an external CEO. And we know this guy. He ran a chocolate company called Barry Callebaut. And while he was in charge there, the share price doubled. And we've met him a number of times. You know, as I said, the meetings are really key to knowing who and what you're investing in. And we like this guy. You know, we like what he's about. We see evidence of what he's achieved before, and we benefited from that in our funds. So we think it's one of those companies where they are lagging the peer group so much. You know, those financial, all that geeky stuff that we do at our desks, looking at financials and KPIs and all that stuff. Danone is a clear-cut case of something's not working properly in this company. We think he's going to be able to go in and sort it out. And that's why we're in it now, for the first time in years and years. You know, Danone was one of those stocks that it wasn't really worth PMs bothering with, because if you got it right, you probably didn't get a huge amount of credit for it. If you got it wrong, then everyone would just say, "We told you so, you idiot. You never buy Danone." You know, I think there are old sayings that I can't remember right now about something like, "You only own Danone once because it goes wrong, and then you learn to never own it again." And maybe this will be that moment for us. But Danone, there we are. We're investing in a guy that we like, and that's essentially why we think Danone's prospects are going to be better in future. The second example is a stock that I'm basically like a broken record when I talk about it, and it's Signify, and it's the old Philips lighting business. And, you know, it's a product of stock market financial engineering, effectively, which is companies go, all of the analysts that cover our stock keep telling us that we should get rid of this low growth business, and that if we do that, our share price will go up, or it'll go down by less than the value that we've just taken out of the company by spinning off the rubbish company. In other words, you get a re-rating. Your stock will trade on a higher multiple. And actually, that it does actually work quite a lot. So I can see why they did it. But effectively, Signify was the runt of the Philips litter. And it's an old light bulb business, and they still use the Philips brand. So, you know, when you want to go and buy or replace your light bulbs or your LEDs in your house and you buy Philips, that is now Signify. They pay a royalty to big Philips to use that brand. But it's a company that's in transition from a technological perspective, and it's what I mentioned, where technological shifts allow a legacy industry or a legacy product to suddenly be enhanced and be more valuable. And that can change the business model. It can change the financial metrics of the company in terms of margins, cash flow, return on capital. And Signify is one of those. It's already largely transitioned the business from old incandescent halogen light bulbs through to LEDs. And it had a bit of trouble doing that because there was competing Chinese capacity. And it was a technology that was still maturing, and when a technology is still maturing, the cost is always coming down, so the pricing is always coming down. So they had to manage that transition. And the big thing is, your old light bulbs you'd replace once a year, your LEDs are once every 7 years. So again, there's a bit of an air pocket that opens up in your revenue. You used to get revenue from a person every year. Now you're getting revenue from that person every 7 years, but eventually that smooths itself out. But where we are now with Signify is, you know, you read any paper, you read any financial website, anything like that, all you hear about right now is the energy transition, right? Electrification. And a huge component of electrification is energy efficiency. There's no point in making everything electric if you're just wasting a load of electricity. Sure. So one of the first things you can do in the energy transition is improve that energy efficiency, and lighting is switching to not only LEDs but connected LEDs that have sensors that they can sense when people are in the room or how many people are in a building at any one time. All of that stuff, that saves an enormous amount of electricity, and that's where Signify is now. And you can buy the Philips Hue set up for your home now, so you can walk into your home and on your app you can set the colour in different rooms, you know, the shade, all of that stuff. The CEO of Signify says he doesn't have a light switch in his house now, which is a big cost saving as well when you think about it. So connected lighting is energy efficiency, electrification. That's going to be a huge tailwind for them because we've got the sustainability agenda in Europe, the recovery fund. That's pumping a load of money into all of these themes. The same's going on in the US. Biden's trying to push stuff through now. And then the other one, which is a little bit further away in the future, but it's growing a lot now, and I find it really fascinating, is food security, food sustainability. And Signify can supply the app and the lighting for vertical farms and smart greenhouses. So a smart greenhouse would be, we're going to grow tomatoes in this greenhouse. Signify will give you the lighting setup, which is both bulb and app, that sets a specific light frequency or recipe, as they call it, for growing tomatoes, because tomatoes will thrive on a certain light frequency.
So it's like the optimum light environment
for and
that
that's the thing,
tomato growth.
You no longer, if you take that 10, 15, 20 years in the future, you're not trucking tomatoes over from Spain out of season and creating all that pollution through travel. You're growing them in the UK and you're growing them in smart facilities that give you a much higher yield than growing them outside. And they use a fraction of the water. So it's, you know, it's resource efficient, it's localized food. So food security, which is, you know, one of the UN Sustainable Development Goals, these guys are going to play quite a big part in that. And that concludes my sermon on Signify.
Tom, as ever, it was a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you for your time.
Pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, review, and share this with anyone you think will also find it interesting. If you want to learn more about investment trusts, we have a wealth of information available on our website, which you can find in the show notes. Glossary.
ESG stands for Environmental, Social and Governance, which are three key criteria used to evaluate a company's ethical impact and sustainable practices. Return on capital, a profitability ratio used to indicate how effective a company is at turning capital into profit. Private equity, investment into a company that is not listed on the stock exchange. Like infrastructure investing, it tends to involve investors committing large amounts of money for long periods of time.
Balance sheets, a financial statement that summarises a company's assets, liabilities and shareholders' equity at a particular point in time. Each segment gives investors an idea as to what the company owns and owes, as well as the amount invested by shareholders. It is called a balance sheet because of the accounting equation, assets equals liabilities plus shareholders' equity. Cash flow. The term cash flow refers to the net amount of cash and cash equivalents being transferred in and out of a company. Cash received represents inflows, while money spent represents outflows. Key performance indicators, KPIs. Key performance indicators refer to a set of quantifiable measurements used to gauge companies' overall long-term performance. Profit margin, the amount by which sales of a product or service exceeds business and production costs. Return on capital, a profitability ratio used to indicate how effective a company is at turning capital into profits. For the period of the 29th of December 2017 to the 31st of December 2018, the share price change was minus 12.3% and the net asset value change was minus 5.4%. For the period of the 30th of December 2016 to the 29th of December 2017, the share price change was 13% and the net asset value change was 8%. For the period of the 31st of December 2015 to the 30th of December 2016, the share price change was 6.1% and the net asset value change was 7.5%. The company's performance is not benchmarked against any specific stock market index. All performance, cumulative growth, and annual growth data is sourced from Morningstar. Important information. References made to individual securities should not constitute or form part of any offer or solicitation to issue, sell, subscribe, or purchase the security. Janus Henderson Investors, one of its affiliated advisors, or its employees may have a position mentioned in the securities mentioned in the report. for promotional purposes and not for onward distribution. Before investing in an investment trust referred to in this document, you should satisfy yourself as to its suitability and the risks involved, and you may wish to consult a financial advisor. Past performance is not a guide to future performance, and the value of an investment and the income from it can fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested. Tax assumptions and reliefs depend upon an investor's particular circumstances and may change if those circumstances or the law change. Nothing in this document is intended to or should be construed as advice. This document is not a recommendation to sell or purchase any investment. It does not form part of any contract for the sale or purchase of any investment. And we may record telephone calls for our mutual protection, to improve customer service, and for regulatory record keeping purposes. Issued in the UK by Janus Henderson Investors. Janus Henderson Investors is the name under which investment products and services are provided by Janus Capital International Limited, registration number 3594615, Henderson Global Investors Limited, registration number 906355, Henderson Investment Funds Limited, registration number 2678531, Henderson Equity Partners Limited, registration number 2606646, each registered in England and Wales at 201 Bishopsgate, London, EC2M3AE, and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority, and Henderson Management SA, registration number B22848 at 2 Rue de Bitburg, L-1273, Luxembourg, and regulated by the Commission de Surveillance du Secteur Financier. Janus Henderson, Janus, Henderson, Intech, Velocity Shares, Knowledge Shared, Knowledge Shared, and Knowledge Labs are trademarks of Janus Henderson Group PLC or one of its subsidiaries. Copyright Janus Henderson Group PLC.